First of all, just tell me, what does it feel like to be appointed to the Idaho Supreme Court?
Well, it's a great honor. It was also an honor 9 years ago when Governor Otter appointed me to be a district judge. But to have him now once again place his trust in me to serve in this much greater capacity is just a very humbling experience, and I'm grateful for the opportunity.
For those of us who are not quite familiar with what the state Supreme Court does, what will this new job be about for you?
Well, as a district judge, I've been serving as a trial judge, which means I preside over trials and all parts of trials. So, for example, on criminal cases, I preside over sentencings and arraignments and those type of things. In civil cases, motions for summary judgment, discovery matters, and then, of course, trials. I get to work with juries and those type of things. Being on the Supreme Court is an appellate position, which means I will essentially be reviewing the decisions of other judges that they've made on the type of cases I've now been handling, I'm currently handling. So it's a little different role. I'm not going to be involved in trials anymore, but I will be involved in reviewing the results of trials and making sure that the law was applied properly and fairly.
And in Idaho, the state Supreme Court travels sometimes. For instance, they'll come to BYU-Idaho once in a while. What does that mean for you to be able to get to see the state that way?
Well, one thing for sure I can tell you, I'm going to make sure that they keep coming to BYU-Idaho, and if I can increase the frequency, I will do so. But it's part of the mandate for the Supreme Court. Although they hear most of their cases in Boise, it's important for us to get around the state and see what's happening and get a feel for things. And I'm really looking forward to that opportunity. I've appeared as a judge throughout southeastern Idaho and in parts of like Twin Falls and Pocatello, but I've never had an opportunity to appear in northern Idaho or in Boise. And so I'm looking forward to the opportunity I have to get to go to new places and meet new people and learn new things.
Now, you're a graduate of BYU's J. Reuben Clark Law School.
Yes, I graduated from there in 1990.
That's great. What else has helped prepare you for this position?
Well, obviously, I'm a product of southeastern Idaho. I graduated from South Fremont High School, and then I went on to BYU. I spent my whole education being a Cougar. Went on to the BYU Law School, and I'm proud, I think, to be the second graduate from the J. Reuben Clark Law School to be appointed to the Idaho Supreme Court. The most important things that happened after that, though, were the 19 years I spent as an attorney based in Rexburg, but serving all of southeastern Idaho. I had an opportunity as an attorney to handle cases of a vast and broad variety. I did a lot of water law, a great deal of civil litigation, and some criminal cases. Because of that experience, I think it prepared me really well when I became a district judge because I was used to handling a very broad variety of cases. I wasn't just focused on one narrow area of law. And so that was helpful when I first took the bench as a district judge. And I know I'm still going to be drawing upon that experience now as I approach statewide cases on the Supreme Court.
I know those cases, they can, like you mentioned, this broad opportunity, but one day you'll be talking about water, the next day it's something business related, and it's just all over the place.
Yeah, that's so true. And again, being a district judge has acclimated me to that just because I deal with such a broad variety of cases currently as a district judge. And I really did as an attorney, too. My law practice at the firm of Rigby Anderson Moeller, which is now known as Rigby Anderson Rigby, was just such great training for me. The wonderful attorneys I worked with there and I was mentored by, Ray Rigby, Gordon Thatcher, Rich Andrus, Jerry Rigby. While I was there, Michael S. Cam was a great mentor to me. And that experience in learning from good men, how to be a lawyer and how to respect the law, has carried on with me ever since.
I've watched you at the courtroom before, and it seems like even as a judge, you're always trying to teach. You're helping the person who's a suspect understand what's going on. You're helping the jurors. You're helping different people. Will you continue that role as a teacher?
I hope so. First of all, please do you notice that, because that's something I've tried to be very consciously aware of, and I'm not sure people realize that I'm doing it when I'm doing it. So I'm glad you noticed. As an appellate judge, obviously, the decisions that we write will be setting forth what the law is, and that's going to be one of the big differences. As a district judge, I look at the Supreme Court decisions and follow their precedent. Well, now on the Supreme Court, I will be writing decisions that will be precedent. So that really is going to give me some opportunities to teach people about what the law is and what it should be. But beyond my duties on the bench, I've always been very involved in the community, done a lot of public speaking. I speak in all the high school classes at Madison High School whenever they talk about The Book to Kill a Mockingbird, because of my connection to that book. And I've spoken on campus on many occasions about media law and ethics. I even taught at BYU-Idaho for 5 semesters as an adjunct professor. So I've spent most of my life in whatever capacity I've been in as an attorney or as a judge teaching the law, and I don't expect that's going to change. If it changes at all, it will just be the breadth of my audience now will potentially be much bigger, and I'm looking forward to that.
You mentioned To Kill a Mockingbird. Please explain your connection to that book.
Well, when I was a young man, about in 10th grade, we were able to see the movie To Kill a Mockingbird. And I don't think we have time in this interview to go over all the details, but there's a scene in that movie where the attorney who is representing a man that's clearly innocent, he happens to be African-American man accused of raping a white woman. And unfortunately, he was falsely convicted by the jury in that case. As he turns to leave the courtroom is all empty except for the black folks that are sitting up in the balcony with his children. And they all stand up in unison as he leaves the courtroom. And there was something about that scene when the minister says, well, his daughter Scout asks, why is everyone standing? And the minister says, because your father is passing. When I saw that scene as a young high school student, I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I felt it. Chill go up my spine, and I knew at that moment I was going to be a lawyer someday. And I also knew someday that I would, for some reason, I just knew that I would be representing the innocent man in an important case. As it turned out, after I became an attorney, very early in my legal career, during the first year, I got appointed, along with my colleague, Mike Cam, to handle a murder case. And we felt that the man was innocent. And although we lost the trial, we continued to appeal and fight for his freedom for 15 years. Unfortunately, my partner Mike died along the way, but with the help of a co-counsel, an attorney from Boise named Dennis Benjamin, we continued to work on the case. I spent the last 5 years in federal court working on it pro bono, and eventually we were able to convince a judge to reverse the conviction, and later we got the charges dismissed against our client. I gave a speech on the BYU-Idaho campus in 2009, detailing in much more detail than I've just done the story of that case. And someone sent a copy of it to Harper Lee's publicist, and she had just recently suffered a stroke, so the publicist forwarded it to her minister, who read it to her in the nursing home in Alabama. And then she sent me an autographed copy of the book To Kill a Mockingbird that was personalized to me. And so that's a pretty interesting tie with the book, frankly. It's one of those stories that if Hollywood tried to tell, people would think they had made it up. But think about the story arc here. This was an instance where a young man is inspired to become an attorney by a book. He does become an attorney, later takes on a case similar to that in the book, eventually gets his client off on the charges, gives a speech about his experiences, and then the person that wrote the book sends him an autographed copy of the book. So it's a pretty amazing story, and it's deeply affected my life.
Your life has been so much about service and helping the community through being a lawyer and a judge. What is your philosophy in this position?
Well, I think we need to remember it's all about people. Sometimes it's easy to look at our caseload and say, well, that's not a very important case or that's not a very serious topic. But I think we need to remember that every case I have is very important to the people that are involved. For For some of them, it's the most important thing in their life or their most important concern or worry. Also, when I have defendants in front of me in court, I know some of them have just done terrible things. Some of them might be innocent. But for all of them, I'm pretty well aware that when they appear before me, it might be the worst day of their life. And so there's no reason for me to make it any harder for them by being mean. Also, I guess I need to understand, too, and one thing that's always been important to me is I think a judge has a responsibility to discern between stupidity and evil. And my philosophy has always been that stupidity deserves a second chance, but evil doesn't. And so I've tried to reflect that in my sentencing practices.
Is there anything that you'll miss about your district judge job?
Well, yes. I will miss presiding over and trying cases and working with juries. I'll miss the opportunities I have as a drug court and mental health court judge to work personally with people and trying to help them overcome their addictions. Frankly, being on the Supreme Court will isolate me a little more from the community than I'm used to, and that'll be something I just have to get used to. I'll miss all of the attorneys and the court personnel I've worked with here. Just the 7th District Bar has been really great to me since I've been a judge. All of the court clerks here in Madison, Fremont, Teton, Jefferson, Bonneville, Custer, Lemhi Counties, Blackfoot down in Bingham County, just so many places I've worked, and I've just loved all the people that have worked in the courts to, you know, support the judges. Those folks don't work for me. They're my colleagues, and we're all doing important work, and I've appreciated their contributions.
Now, this was the third time that you were a finalist for a Supreme Court, as a Supreme Court nomination in Idaho. Is it kind of third time's the charm, or how did this work out?
Well, it's either third time's the charm or three strikes and you're out, depending on your perspective. I will tell you, it's been a long crusade, if you want to use that word, or a long journey. This has been going on for 18 months. It's unprecedented in Idaho history, I think, to have three Supreme Court openings in just a 18-month period like this. And the first time I did it, I was kind of an unknown, and I think I surprised a lot of people by making it to the finals, and I came close but didn't quite get it. Second time, it was a little more disappointing, but a very good man and a very good judge was appointed over me. And so when it came for the third time, I wasn't sure if I really wanted to put myself through this for another 8-9 months. It's just very taxing to be a candidate for that long. It's almost like running for president. But a lot of really good people encouraged me and spoke with me. I got a lot of good advice from people. And after, a lot of people that are important to me gave me their thoughts and viewpoints and encouragement, I decided to try it again. And I didn't know what to expect the third time, and very excited and happy how it turned out. The other attorneys that I was competing against for the position were very accomplished civil attorneys. All three of them have very impressive resumes and experience as civil litigators, and so it was far from a foregone conclusion that I was going to get this. And again, it was a very competitive pool of people that I had to compete with for this.
Well, we tell you congratulations. This will be a big opportunity for you. And you start January 1st?
The date that I start isn't set yet. And I can speculate that it will likely be sometime during the first week in January that I'll be sworn in. That's just an estimate, though, based on looking at the calendar and understanding the reality of Idaho politics, when the new governor will likely be sworn in on the first Monday, which is the 7th. And so I'm assuming the old governor certainly is going to be swearing me in, so we'll have to do it before then. So it will likely be the very first week of January sometime.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for, I know a lot of your listeners have been good friends to me and big support to me over the years, not just in this Supreme Court application, but in everything I've done in my life, with my family, with my career, with my faith. And I just appreciate all of them so much. And we will miss them greatly. We will think of them often. And we're going to return as much as we can.
Excellent. Thank you again.
Thank you.